And welcome to the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow. Thanks so much for tuning in. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Some big news here right off the top is the Giants have announced they have traded defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So the Giants are going to receive the Bucs' third-round draft choice. That's the number 69 overall pick. And in addition, they're going to swap fourth-round picks. So the Giants are going to move down six spots from the second selection in that round, number 102 to number 108. So the Giants, who had five draft picks overall, are now going to gain an additional draft pick to make it six heading into the 2018 NFL draft. And they part ways with their third longest tenured member of the team, as JPP was right behind Eli Manning and Zach DiOsi. He had been with the team since 2010. He was a first-round pick. They are moving to a new defense, Paul, and you know we've talked about this on a variety of different shows since James Betcher took over. Would JPP fit into a 3-4 defensive scheme? And you know there were obviously some questions about that, but Dave Gettleman's putting his own stamp on this roster. He doesn't have a lot of ties to these players, and this is another indication that this is his new regime and this is his identity.
Yes, that is true. Now, JPP at one point was talking to the Arizona Cardinals a couple of years ago when it looked like he may not come back to the Giants, and Betcher was there. So it's clear that Betcher does like JPP as a player and would have found a way to use him had the Giants decided to stay that way. But now what they've done is they've got picks 2, 34, 66, and 69 in the first three rounds of the draft. So that's four draft picks in the top 70, okay? They also have 108 and 139 on the third day. So they're really set up, you know, to do a lot of reconstruction in the first three rounds of this draft. That's what this says to me, and it's something that, you know, I've been advocating, not necessarily the JPP move, but the acquiring of picks.
Assets.
In the first three rounds. Because that's where I think the Giants can really make an impact with guys who can do something right away to help this team turn around very quickly. I think the positives and the negatives for JPP, and really, folks, we could slice this apple as many ways as you want. What it comes down to is the number that I dug up last year, 68 total tackles, was third amongst NFL defensive ends. He also had 8.5 sacks, okay? He is a productive player. He is a good player. He does play the run very well. Learned to do that later in his career. 8 years in the NFL with the Giants. Certainly was a joy to be around. Now, what do you say in terms of the other side of it and why he's gone? Well, the assets they acquired, obviously. They get a little bit of salary cap relief this year. A lot more next year, for sure. But as a guy who's been in the league 8 years, he's had the hand issue. He's had knee problems. He's had back problems. He's had shoulder problems. He has been beaten up a lot in 8 seasons. And so, let's face it, in games when he wore the club or the mitt on his hand, and that even happened for some games last year,
yeah,
he was not nearly the same player as he was when he was fully healthy. When he's fully healthy, JPP is as good as any defensive end, I think, in the National Football League. The trouble is when you're now 29 years old and been in the league for 8 years, as you project over this season, next season, how many more fully healthy games are you going to get? And that's the scale that you have to weigh as you determine what is his value and do you keep him or do you try to turn him into other assets? That, to me, was the primary question that the Giants had to answer. And they have now made this move.
Yeah, JPP played 16 games this past season. It was the first time he played all 16 games since 2014.
And he was banged up.
Yeah, he was not necessarily fully healthy, like most players. It was a grind, but to your point, I mean, you are talking about a versatile defensive lineman who you don't have to take off the field because you can keep him on the field to stop the run, get to the quarterback.
Played over 90% of the snaps in each of the last 2 seasons.
With Olivier Vernon. I mean, that's why we talked about the importance of gaining that third, that fourth, that fifth defensive end so that you have a little bit more substance and opportunities to rotate personnel in, which is why they brought in guys like Kareem Martin, guys like Josh Morrow. But now with JPP out of the equation, Paul, at least moving forward now, all right, so Vernon, you know you're penciling him in. I mean, you have one of the guys on the edge. Now there's really going to be a competition to see who's going to be the complementary piece for Vernon at this point.
Well, and that is why you now have to evaluate, do you need and what is your priority in terms of going to get somebody in the draft like a Bradley Chubb, okay, who, you know, I think by most evaluators is a top five pick in this draft. So do you do that, or do you go deeper in the draft and try to get somebody there, or do you still have a free agent out there who you think you might be able to go get somebody like? Oh, I don't know. I don't want to throw out names because that would be irresponsible.
Well, there's options, though.
There are some veteran defensive ends out there, none of them of JPP's caliber necessarily, but are out there if you want to try to provide some insurance, some depth, as you look to the draft, if that's the way you want to go. But in any event, it is certainly an earth-shattering move in that the Giants now only have three players left from the 2011 Super Bowl team. Okay, that would be D'Asi, Herzlick, and Eli Manning. So, you know, the turnover gets closer and closer to being complete till one day there'll be no guys left from that Super Bowl team.
Well, then again, I mean, we're in 2018. We're talking about 7 years removed coming up from that roster. And in the NFL, 7 years is a long time.
It really is.
So normally rosters turn over very quickly. So the fact that they still have some remaining players, I think, is quite impressive when you look at how much the league has changed from year to year. But it just goes to show you once again the movement of a new regime and the movement in a direction of Dave Gettleman's type of roster and what he envisions this team to become.
And let's make something very clear from the consensus of draft people and NFL personnel people. The third round is very strong area for still getting corners and still getting wide receivers.
Even running backs, too.
Even running backs.
Well. Yeah.
Giants are looking to enhance depth, you would think, in all of those positions. So getting that extra third-round pick is very valuable to them. It should fit not just a quality player, but a need as well. This is why the top three rounds are very important to them, as many picks as they can get their hands on. That's a good thing.
Well, I look at it through this perspective. You traded for Alec Ogletree. You gave up the compensatory fourth-round pick and the sixth-round pick, and now you make another trade. You get a pick back, one of which you sacrificed for Alec Ogletree, and it's actually higher up in the draft.
It's a three.
So you went from a compensatory four to an additional three. Not necessarily a bad trade-off when you combine both of these deals together.
Yeah.
So that's another way to look at it in terms of trying to gain additional resources. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. We get the festivities started with Jordan, who is in Texas. Jordan, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you guys this morning?
All right, Jordan. What do you got for us?
Well, you know what? I got to say, honestly, guys, I'm actually a little bit relieved with the JPP trade. You know, I love what he did for us while he was with us before his accident. He was a very dominant player. But, you know, I thought his contract was a little expensive. You know, and like you said, Paul, tough for him to stay healthy. You know, another issue that he had a lot, he had abdominal surgery, too, with a sports hernia.
Yep. Totally, you know, forgot that one.
So he's gotten banged up. He's had a lot of issues. It's sad to see him go, but wish him the best. And, you know, I'm glad that we got some picks for him and was able to free up some cap space. Now, I like what you guys are saying about trying to maximize this draft. I'm on the fence. You know, Paul, I know that you are all about getting as many picks as we can. I know you're not super high on getting, you know, maybe a Saquon Barkley or something like that.
No, but, I'd be okay with Barkley. Trust me, I would.
Yeah. Well, I know, I would too. I think he's a tremendous player. I think if we were to do that, we're obviously in a win-now mode. I think he completely changes the offense. He takes some of the pressure off of Eli Manning. I think that opens up Eli Manning to kind of shine, really, because it's going to force defenses to stay honest with us.
Right.
And not do what they did to us the past 2 years because we were so predictable. You know, they stacked the box and it was crazy. But I like the idea. I want you to kind of give me what you think here about possibly a trade with either the Dolphins at 11 or the Bills at 12. Now,
right.
if we did that, the Jets just paid a very, very high price to move up to 3.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't give up a first-round pick, though.
I think that if we did that, they would have to give up a lot. But it would keep us, you know, it would keep us in the top 12 in terms of picks. You know, you never know what can happen in the draft. Somebody like, you know, Bradley Chubb might slip down there, but maybe not.
He probably doesn't get down to 11, but here's what I will say. Based on the price that the Jets had to pay the Colts for the number 3, you know, the 3 second rounders that they had to give up in addition to the swap, you're not taking anything less than a deal that's going to include a package with next year's number 1. Because the
Absolutely.
Jets have already set the price for the 3rd pick, and you own the 2nd pick. So you got to go higher than whatever the Jets paid, which means, you know, the 2019 number 1 is going to have to be part of it, I would think, just based on pure football logic.
Well, plus 2 to 11 or 2 to 12 is a much more significant jump than 3 to 6.
The further you drop, the more you get.
So, I mean, that's more of a reason why you'd want to start with at least the first rounder from 2019. I don't think that's necessarily asking for much. And I mean, because I really think in the big picture of things, I don't think the Jets sacrificed that much. I mean, the fact that they only had to give up 3 second rounders and kept their first rounders, I mean, from a value standpoint, that was a really good deal for them.
For 3 slots.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you still, though, don't have to give up your first rounder for the next year, I think most executives would do that trade in a heartbeat.
I think it'd be a good move for us to explore. You know, if it's there, if not, I mean, I'm thinking either Chubb or Barkley at 2. You know, I like the Quentin Nelson. I love Quentin Nelson. I think he would be great. But I think that if you're gonna pick a player at 2, the previous regime has kind of put us in a sticky spot. We're between a rock and a hard place. You know, I don't necessarily think that we should go quarterback only because. We believe in Eli Manning, and we don't know what we have yet in Davis Webb. That's a third round pick from last year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He could very well be groomed and be a productive player, at least to fill in the role until we, you know, can find the future. But, you know, in terms of winning now and maximizing the end of Eli's career and trying to, you know, kind of send him off on a high note, I think, you know, we either maximize the picks with a trade down to, you know, 11 or 12, or just because those are quarterback needy teams, or we go Barkley or Bradley Chubb.
All right, Jordan, appreciate the phone call. I mean, remember, when you draft number 2 overall, it's not just about 2018. It's about big picture as well. So when he says, you know, you want to maximize Eli Manning's window, you also want to, at the same time, make sure you're prepared well for the future, too. You want to be able to capitalize in both of those areas.
Well, at number 2, you should be able to capitalize in both areas. And I think anybody worth their grain of salt will tell you that Barkley, Nelson, or Chubb will not just help you for 18. They're going to help you for the next 5 or 6 years. At least you think so.
No, but
even the running back should be able to do that.
Well, if you went in the direction of a quarterback, though, I don't think you'd be making that same argument.
No, you can't.
The quarterback's not going to be on the field.
That's the one position you can absolutely say does not satisfy both requirements.
Yeah, it's more of a future than perhaps a now thing. And as far as Nelson is concerned, I mean, a lot of people view him as one of the best offensive linemen in this draft, maybe arguably the best offensive lineman, regardless of tackle versus guard. And a lot of then people on the flip side argue, well, you never usually take a guard that high. But then again, Brandon Scherff went to the Redskins 2 years ago. He was a top 5 pick. I know Zach Martin was much lower down in the first round, so it's not necessarily as high. But those two guards in particular have made immediate impacts for their respective offensive lines. So that can't be overlooked as well.
You know, if you value the overall longevity of the guy, for example, if you pick a guy and he turns out to be an 8-time Pro Bowl player over the course of the next decade, chances are he's probably going to the Hall of Fame. So if I said to you, and I think I said this the other day, maybe it was you, maybe it was John, if I said to you right now, okay, make me a wager. Nelson, Barkley, Chubb. Which one of those 3 guys do you think has the best chance to be in Canton in 20 years? Which one do you think it's going to be? And from everything that I've heard, from the combine all the way till now, Nelson is probably the guy who I would say has the best chance to go to Canton. But he's an offensive lineman, and again, Football 101 says you can't take the guard at number two. But if you think about it, an offensive lineman who is at the elite level will give you probably 12 to 15 years and may go on to 8 Pro Bowls. Even the really good running backs probably won't give you that long. In fact, we know they're not playing 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay? Even if he plays 8 years, he may only have 3 Pro Bowl seasons. And if you go the other way to the defensive end, how many defensive ends do you know that maybe they play 8, 9, 10 years? I mean, even JPP, 8 years in the league, he's only had 3 years where he was double digits in sacks. I like JPP a lot. I think he was a really good player. He's not a Hall of Famer. So, you know, if Chubb is JPP, and if, I don't know, if Barkley is, if Barkley is Thurman Thomas. Oh, Thurman Thomas turned out to be really good.
Yeah, I mean,
but if he's a little less than that, he's a notch below a Hall of Famer, okay? But Nelson turns out to be guaranteed gold jacket, and he plays for 13 years.
Yeah, then you take him without hesitation.
Aren't you better off with Nelson?
Well, I mean, assuming your projections lead to that way, and I'm with you. I mean, that's the goal with the number two overall pick. You want the most impactful player over a long period of
Gettleman
time.
Gettleman says you got to envision him in the gold jacket.
Exactly.
You don't Nelson's probably got the best shot, right?
I would probably agree with you there, where Nelson would probably be number one on the list in terms of projections. And then, you know, I mean, I think Barkley, Chubb,
but
even
in terms of
the return.
Star quality and impact, Chubb probably is at the top. I mean, not Chubb. Barkley's probably at the top of those three. In terms of star quality and superstar highlight
impact.
What
I like to call the sexiness of the player, meaning the flash, the highlights.
But no matter which list we're talking about, Chubb probably doesn't get to be number one on either one of those lists. He's probably number two.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's once again durability and longevity. If Nelson is the one that checks off both of those characteristics, then clearly you go in that direction.
Yeah.
Even if he's not going to make 15-yard
grabs every game. That's why this is so hard, folks.
Well,
that's why this is so hard.
There's valid arguments for a variety of different players, but at the end of the day, you want to maximize the value. That's what it comes back to.
Yeah.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Tony on the line in D.C. Tony, what's happening?
Hey, gents. Boy, I was not going to talk about JPP. Wow.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. Do you guys think Avery Moss has a shot at starting? I like him, but what do you guys think?
Well, I think you look at him in Betcher's system, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they use him. Because right now, I think he's the backup to Vernon. That's how I see him.
Gotcha.
I see him as the guy who's going to give Vernon some snaps off. I don't think he's a starter right now. I just think let's get Vernon off for a series because he needs a break. Because we don't want to play him for 95% of the snaps again. That's just too much. That's what I see. But we haven't had the chance to sit down and do a media interview yet with James Betcher. I'm very, very interested to do that. It will be coming up, I think, sometime in the next month.
Well, I think Morrow, his familiarity with the system, I mean, he'd be the first one that I think has a leg up, perhaps, on the rest of the competition, just because he knows the system and there's some upside that obviously Betcher has seen as well as Gettleman. So, I mean, he would probably be a guy that you would think maybe would be penciled in to take the place of JPP right off the bat. But you also have Romeo Okwara, who's young, Avery Moss, you mentioned. So, you know, there's a few options, but right now, I would say the clubhouse leader is Morrow, if you were to ask me.
Okay, gotcha. So, in my one end question, so I do think you can build for the future and drop the quarterback in the first round. I mean, we just saw the Chiefs do it last year. They moved up to 12
Patrick
and got Patrick Mahomes
and
still plans on winning. So, I do think you can do both. But here's my question for you guys. I think I've settled on my path for this draft pick, despite what, you know, the Giants decided to do, of course. So if you don't go QB at number two, I would prefer to trade back, and I'm picking the Bills because they have the most first-round picks this year, and they have two picks in the second round, yes. But overall, because I am just too through about talking about fixing the offensive line. If we trade with the Bills, and if we can get, say, McGlinchey at 12 and Hernandez in the early 20s, and maybe Price is there at 34, you know, a top lineman, I am fully on board with picking up, using our first top three picks to pick up three linemen so we can stop worrying about this offensive line unit? Am I too dedicated to it? What do you guys think?
Well, you know, it all starts in the trenches, and you're not going to get any fight from me of using two of the first three picks on offensive linemen. I don't necessarily have to make them 1 and 2 or 2 and 3 or 1 and 3, whatever combination you want to use. I'd have no problem with taking two offensive linemen in the first three rounds, especially since the Giants now have 2 third-round picks. I'd have no problem with that.
And aside from Barkley, and I'll let you guys go, who is your – and he might be your favorite running back, he might be your second favorite, but what would you guys say other than Barkley are your favorite running backs in this draft? Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Appreciate the phone call.
Well, there's guys, there's Michelle, there's there's Chubb. There's
Chubb,
a bunch of them.
Yeah, Chubb is another guy that comes to mind.
I hate to say it. I do like the other Chubb, too.
Yeah.
I do.
I'm with you there. Yeah.
I do. And I think he's third-round value. I think because of the injury, he drops to the third.
Very possible.
You know?
You could certainly get a quality running back or somebody that you could plug in and give some playing time, I think, in the second or the third round in this draft. You know, I don't think that's asking for much.
I think some people think Perry, too.
I think there's a number of...
You know,
options.
I'm not as high on him, but there's without question, there are second and third round running backs that can help a team. There's no doubt. It's deep enough.
Well, I mean, remember, the other thing that is a big part of this conversation is if the offensive line does improve, which obviously has been the focus of Dave Gettleman, and we'll see whether or not that translates to the football field. You know, you have Wayne Goldman still on the roster. Jonathan Stewart, I'm not saying he's in the long-term plans, but it's not as if they don't have guys that can't carry the football. And it still gets back to the offensive line. If the offensive line is productive, that is going to go hand-in-hand with, you hope, an improvement in terms of the run game. So that doesn't mean that you necessarily need to get a savior in the draft in order for the running game to move up the ladder. Kareem Hunt was not necessarily a highly rated or a high draft pick,
right,
and the Chiefs plugged him in, and they had one of the best running games, at least in the first half of the season. So it can be done that way.
If you think Penny, if you think Penny's going to go in the second or third, a guy you might want to look at a little bit longer down is Jalen Samuels from North Carolina State, 6 feet, 225. He only ran a 4.5. He's a little bit bigger frame, a little bit stronger. You know, maybe projection third or fourth round if you want to go a little deeper. But, you know, the guy like Hines is going to go quicker, but he's a little scat back. See, for me, if the Giants are going to take a running back, and Barkley, again, he's 230 pounds. I know he's not Earl Campbell, all right? He's not a bulldozer. But, you know, we've heard people tell us they think he's a heck of a lot stronger than other people think he is. You got to take more of a power back if you're going to take a back if you're the Giants. You got Gallman and you got
Perkins.
Perkins already. You got to get somebody different than them. I would not want to take a guy who does what they do. It'd have to be a different skill set.
Well, because you'd want somebody that over the long term would likely take the role of Jonathan Stewart. That's should be the vision, yeah, of perhaps the building of the roster. That if Stewart right now is the short term answer there for goal line work, for first down, second down, who could do that over the long haul? Mm-hmm. That's, to me, the type of running back you should look to grab to complement the likes of Wayne Goldman and Paul Perkins. I still think there's value on the roster. It goes back to the offensive line. I mean, there's so many teams that have not necessarily invested a great deal of value and money in a running back, but they still have productive run games, Paul. And why do they have productive run games? Because of the offensive line. So, you know, that has to be a key part of the thinking and the rationale.
Without a doubt.
When you're building a team.
Look, it doesn't matter if you're a power back or a flashback. If your offensive line isn't doing a job, you got a problem.
Exactly. So that's why I'm saying, I mean, we could sit here and say, you know, Barkley's better than this guy and this guy's better than that guy. At the end of the day, it all comes down to the offensive line. I mean, that's what has to click. If that facet doesn't click, well, we could speculate about 50 different running backs. To me, it's not going to make a difference.
No doubt.
Let's head back to the phone line. Sean is in Brooklyn. Sean, what's happening?
And Paul.
Hi.
How are you doing,
Paul? Calling because I made a little wager with my cousin, and I told him the Giants were going to trade JPP, and it's so ironic that we had this conversation 3 days ago. But,
really?
I think the JPP makes sense because the Giants right now, with the new system they're running, and we already knew that JPP didn't really fit well unless they play, like, the hybrid front, and they have the four-man, that's where JPP will sit on the edge and protect the run. But with the injuries and the stuff and the contract he just signed, it only made sense to get rid of him to free up some cap space. The other two cap casualties that I told my cousin about, especially with the Latimer signing, is Harris, the wide receiver that usually does the punt kick return for us, and Brandon Marshall. I believe the Giants is going to take the second pick. I would see them trading with Buffalo, but my picks for Buffalo is kind of different. I'm looking more at, with the 12th pick, they get that 19-year-old linebacker. His name slips my mind. And then with the 22nd pick, that's where you could get your guard or whatever you want to plug in for the offensive line and pick up some extra picks along the way. What do you guys think?
Well, it seems, based on the consensus of the combine folks, the linebackers take a pretty deep drop after the early second round. So,
okay.
So if you really want to go, some of the names that we talked about a lot, Edmonds, Landry, Van Der Esch, and Evans, and then it starts getting a little sketchy. Carter is another guy that people see in the first couple of rounds. At that point, then there's a little bit more of a line. You know, even the Wosu from USC, he's not a power attack at the point of attack kind of guy. He's more of a cover guy, which actually will fit the Giants' scheme well. He's not going to fit everybody's scheme well, but Nwosu will probably be a kind of guy who would interest Betcher for the kind of stuff that he's going to play. But he's not, you know, it's going to have to be a scheme fit once you start getting later into the second round for the linebackers. It's not as deep a position in the draft as, for example, corner, receiver, running back. You know what I mean?
Okay. So would you think that us moving out a second with the Bills, they have the two first-rounders and we could pick up some extra capital. Do you think picking the linebacker at 12 would make sense? I'm looking at that young kid. His name slipped my mind, but he's 19 years old. I could see picking him with the 12th pick. You have him for the foreseeable future.
Here's the thing. I think if you're the Giants and you're going to make the move out of number two, I've talked about this before. How far do you go? It's a hard question to answer. Do you go to 11? Do you go to 12? Do you go to 15? I've said at some points during this program over the last 3 months, I might go as far as 15. I'm going to be honest with you. The more that I talk to people around the league, the more I think they should not go down that far.
I'm thinking
they got to stay. They got to stay in the top five.
Well, first of all, they just got another third round pick. Okay, so you got six picks now. I mean, I understand there's this urgency to collect picks, get volume. Volume is only valuable depending on what you do with the volume.
Right.
You don't just all of a sudden get better as a team because you have extra draft picks. Number two, you figure based on the percentage is going to land you, in all likelihood, a better player over the long term than anybody else combined further down in the draft. So you have to weigh that, too, as part of the rationale.
See, I have always thought that if they went down to 11, 12, or 15, you'd be thinking maybe for McGlinchey. Okay?
Okay.
But
okay,
now
I
that
think that's a reasonable talk.
Now that they've signed Solder and they're going to move Flowers to right tackle, which is what Gettleman has said,
that he's going to compete there.
You know what? My feeling to do that is a lot less now. Now I'm thinking that you got to get a Chubb, a Nelson, or a Barkley with you. And if you're going to trade down that far, you're not getting any one of those three guys. You're just not.
No, you don't want to take yourself out of the mix where you lose out on an impactful player. I mean, that's the other thing that you need to take into consideration.
That's the problem with going down that far now.
Exactly. And that's the fascination with just purely getting additional picks. But once again, if you remove yourself from getting a quality player just because you went after additional picks, how is that helping your team in the long run?
Okay, I'm going to make it real quick. I think moving out a second pick, especially with the Bills, they still got the two first-rounders.
Yeah, they
I'm
got
just
12
give
and
you
22,
my picks.
Though.
I want that linebacker, the 19-year-old, and I want Christian Kirk, the wide receiver, at 22. And with the additional picks, we can fix whatever we have to fix. Because I'm looking at it with Soldier and Flowers moving over. We still have Chad Wheeler and Biznawadi. I think we have enough on the line right now. We could get somebody in the second round, but I think we have enough on the line right now to solidify the offensive line. Thank you for my call, okay?
Okay. Appreciate the phone call.
Kirk is on the underside of 6 feet. A lot of folks think he's an early second rounder and won't even sneak into the first round. So I think
I think I'd probably have a problem taking him at 22. I think that's too high. And quite frankly, again, with a draft that's deep in receiver, do you have to take one that high? Couldn't you wait to the third or fourth round?
I don't think it's necessary to use that high of a pick. I would agree with you. That's a position of depth in this draft where I think you can wait. And plus, if you're going to bring in a young prospect, you want somebody that is going to be size-wise different than what Odell and Sterling Shepard bring.
Although Latimer does already give them.
Yeah, Latimer does. But remember, we still don't know what exactly the role of Latimer is going to be.
No,
I mean, I'm not saying
that. We need to talk to these coaches.
Exactly. So, now, granted, he's got versatility because he can be a receiver and a special teamer. But I don't know if they envision him as the legitimate number three guy.
No.
I mean, we don't know yet. So, if there is room for a number three guy, there's value in drafting a wide receiver.
FYI to the fans out there, we're not stonewalling you about this. It's just that the Giants assistant coaches, the staff that has been compiled by Pat Shurmur, has not been available to the media for any questions or comments, and won't be. I don't know the exact date that they plan to make them available to us, but it's probably not going to be at least for another month.
It may not be until the spring when they actually start working out.
That's why I make no bones about this. In some ways, we're strictly guessing because we have not talked to these guys.
Yeah, and that's why I also would not remove any position as an option in the draft as a result of not necessarily speaking to the coaching staff. But you also, once again, do not want to reach just because you figure that that may be a need. That's the danger of what happens all the time in the draft, where teams go to the drawing board and they're like, well, this is a better value player, but we need this position. Mm-hmm. And then they start pointing in that direction. That's where you want to avoid.
Yeah.
Because once you get into that area, it's very dangerous.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And again, make sure you understand, with Betcher's scheme, fluidity is the key. So don't box guys into just certain positions, certain styles, and say, well, that's what they are, and they don't fit. Betcher's going to send extra pressure 40% of the time, and he's going to play a ton of nickel and a ton of dime. And he's going to be doing all different things with all different players, which is why, while JPP would not be a good fit in a standard 3-4, you know, and I understand that. With what Betcher does, he's all over the place with his guys. You know, don't pigeonhole any player into a certain traditional role in his defense. That's not what he does.
It's more about the hybrid player.
It really is.
Because there's a lot of versatility that is showcased in the defense. The other thing I want to say before we get back to the lines, when, you know, everybody loves to continue to speculate on where the Giants should go at number two or even if they move down. Remember, you also need to look at, well, Dave Gettleman's draft track record when he was with the Carolina Panthers. And we've talked about this a lot, Paul. Defensive linemen have been the targets mostly in the upper first round, much more so than offensive linemen. And that doesn't mean that that's going to follow suit with the Giants, but he seems to have valued utilizing first-round picks with defensive linemen and then, of course, Christian McCaffrey, much more so than any of these other positions that people are throwing out, like the linebacker or like the wide receiver or like the offensive lineman. And that's something that I think is relevant, at least when you're starting to speculate what direction the Giants may go in. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Matt on Rhode Island. Matt, what's happening?
What's up, fellas?
Hello.
All right, Matt. What do you got for us?
This is a formal request to the Giants to get the tape up there, the highlights. Giants-Cowboys 2011, JPP's signature performance. One of the best individual performances I've ever seen by a player. Obviously, talking about the game where he blocked the field goal at the end. Save that 2011 season. So, you know, it's when guys leave the team, I hate to think like, well, was he this kind of player? You know, I like to go back to the signature moment, and he had one of the best performances in Giant history. So let's get those highlights up there on the website. One thing I think is being missed here is when you talk about trading down for the number two spot. If the Giants either need to take a quarterback at number two, or they need to use that pick to acquire the future assets to get their future quarterback here. This whole idea of taking any player at number two besides a quarterback to me is not maximizing the value of that pick.
Say that one more time. You're talking about
he just confused me.
Yeah, because I was lost with all of those scenarios.
So what I'm saying is, what's being lost here is in talking about trading down from the number two spot.
Right.
The Giants either have to take a quarterback at number two, or in trading down from two, have to acquire the future assets to get their future quarterback. So, like Paul, you've been saying, you're starting with the 2019 first round pick. has to be in a trade. And I agree with that, because at some point in time, they're going to need a quarterback. And look at like the premiums that it costs just to get up a couple of spots. You know, if they're in a position now to get it without having to pay it, they need to either acquire the future assets to get that quarterback, or they have to take a quarterback in that slot.
It sounds like you're ruling out Davis Webb to be the future.
No, I'm not willing to gamble on that. I'm willing.
You
to
want options,
all right? And that's
an understandable spot.
And you're entitled to have that opinion. There's certainly a logical train of thought in that. But I think if you're the Giants right now, you're worried about the 2018 season and the immediate future. I don't know that you can think in this league. There's so much turnover. I don't think you can worry about, and even if Davis Webb is not the answer, that you have to get the next franchise guy now. Because you know what? How many guys on this roster today are going to be here in 3 years? Probably not a ton.
Isn't that the point then? Is that if this team is going to be barren in 3 years, do we want to be barren without a quarterback also?
No, but that's why you don't make the effort to go crazy to get one right now. Because the bulk of this team isn't...
That's the thing. They don't have to go crazy. They're in the spot to get one. Of course. You don't just take one to get one. Take one. If they don't
You have to value that quarterback.
Right.
Yeah.
But see, that's even all the more reason to keep...
one there,
yeah.
They can't stay in that spot. You can't sit there...
Well, that's fine.
Why can't you just then take another position with the number two overall pick? I mean, I agree with your philosophy, Matt. I'm not disagreeing
that... Because you're not maximizing the value of that pick.
Why are you not maximizing?
Well, hold on. If you can't get the price that you want, okay, because you want maximum value, if you can't get the price that you want, then you're kind of backed into making the pick, and then you may have to take Barkley or Chubb or Nelson. And there's nothing wrong with that, because you've got to maximize the value. And quite frankly, if someone's not going to give you a shopping cart load of picks, including next year's number one, then why would you settle for a cheaper price? You know what I'm saying?
Let's be honest, though. The odds of them not being able to get a future first for that pick are slim to none. Somebody's going to offer it to them.
It's possible.
Let them wheel the shopping cart in. Let's see what they got.
But it's also possible at the same time, Matt, that Dave Gettleman has a multitude of options at number two. He values multiple players and believes that that is maximizing the value. So you can't overlook that as well.
He would most likely be wrong, though.
But how do you know that, though?
Matt,
none of these guys stepped on an NFL field. They haven't played one snap. How do you automatically know that if they don't take a quarterback that you have not maximized the value? How do you know that?
I didn't say they have to take a quarterback. I said if they don't take a quarterback or trade the pick for multiple assets, including the future ammunition for a quarterback, they failed. They're going to be back in this spot in a couple of years again.
Well, but first of all, there's a variety of ways.
They might be picking like the Jets, and they had a bad year.
But there's, Matt,
I'll pay the premium for
there's not one rule of thumb in terms of how you have to get your future quarterback. That's number one. There's been a variety of teams that have chosen different routes to get their future quarterback. So nobody says that you have to use your number two overall pick to accomplish
outliers,
that.
Outliers. Mostly outliers.
Well, I'm not saying that it's I'm saying that if you have the 10th overall pick in a future season, who's to say that you can't get a quarterback that way? I mean, we have no idea where the Giants are going to be drafting in future years. That's number one. We don't know who's going to become available as a free agent. We don't know who's going to be put up on the trade market. So, I mean, you're almost looking at it like it's all the chips have to be on the table in 18 or there's no other way to acquire a quarterback. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, that to me is really expressing a dire situation.
It's going to become extremely more difficult for them to acquire a quarterback after this season if they don't use the second pick on it or get future assets. It's going to become more expensive and harder. They're never going to be in a situation to cash in like this again, either by drafting a quarterback or getting the assets.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you still need to be sold on the quarterback. If you want to take a quarterback at two, you need to truly believe that he is the guy. You don't just take it because there's a chance that Eli Manning may be done in 2 years.
100%.
Can't do that.
If that's the case, you have to trade the pick.
See, you and I are going to disagree with that. You're entitled to your opinion. I don't feel as if you don't feel like you can take a quarterback at number two, that the only option is to trade it. I think if you think Quentin Nelson is a Hall of Fame caliber offensive lineman, or Bradley Chubb as a Hall of Fame defensive lineman or Saquon Barkley, you take that player. I mean, I don't necessarily agree that that's a wrong move.
I'm going to end on this. This Hall of Fame, like, it's got to be a Hall of Fame guy. The odds are it's not going to be a Hall of Fame player, whoever they take, just strictly on the odds. You got to be looking. You see an elite player coming out of the draft at whatever spot it is. But again, it's just my opinion. They're never going to be in a spot to cash in for free for a quarterback or get the future assets to get one. So I think that's just kind of being lost in some of this trade down talk. But I appreciate you guys taking my call. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Matt, be well.
Appreciate the phone call. And here's the other thing: even if you do trade down, okay, and you get that future first rounder that the last caller's alluding to, Paul, how do you know how high that first round pick is going to be in 2019? Do you know what the Bills are going to do in 2018, Paul? For all we know, the Bills are going to be a playoff team, which means the pick is going to be lower than you anticipated. Or if you trade with the Denver Broncos for the fifth overall pick, well, how do you know where Denver is going to finish for the 2018
season? That's why I don't think, as much as I have favored a trade for many months now, my asterisk has always been, only if you get the maximum price that you're after. If you can't max it out and get what you believe to be a premium price, don't do it. Don't settle for a lesser price, because you're right. Those picks may not be worth what you think they are.
You have no idea.
So that's why you have to be sure. You have to basically make that other team overpay. They have to overpay to such a degree that you feel confident that you are maxing out the value. That's just the way it is. Otherwise, you don't do it. Take a premier prospect at number two. Just do it. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think that's the wisest game plan, because I'd rather go with the guy that is as close to the surest thing at any position, regardless of filling a need or worrying about what's going to become of the roster in 2020 or beyond, when you have no idea what the roster is going to look like, or how you may all of a sudden be presented with an opportunity to acquire that position through other means. I mean, you just don't know how these things are going to develop and play out.
Now, I want to throw one other thing into this mix. Again, I'm going to make it really quick, because Football Perspective is a pretty cool website to peruse through. They put a lot of statistical analyses in and historical analysis in there for debate. And they have an article here about what should be the expectation of a first-round quarterback. And this one is really, really very, very interesting. They talk about the draft from 1990 through 2014. And they took all the first-round quarterbacks between those years and said, okay, how many turned out to be just very good? Not all-stars, not Super Bowl champs, but how many of those quarterbacks turned out to be very good? Only one-third of them turned out to be very good. Two-thirds of the quarterbacks taken in the first round from those years did not even get to that level. Turned out to be, if you want to use the word bust, use the word bust. It is not an exact science.
No.
And I throw that in there because, and I don't have the same chart for other positions. I wish they had done a chart for every position to see what the percentage of success rate is for first round picks at each position. But only one third of the quarterbacks taken in the first round since 1990 turned out to be very good or better, which means taking one of these four is a risk.
There's always a risk involved.
It's a big risk.
Here's the other thing. I mean, what I would love to know more about that study from 1990 is I would love to know the quarterbacks taken and, you know, what was the shape of the roster that they were thrown into.
Well, that's
because
all.
Remember,
that's also,
I mean,
part of
that's
it.
That's a huge indicator as to whether or not the quarterback panned out.
No question.
And that has to be considered no matter what young quarterback you draft. I mean, somebody asked me on Twitter the other night whether or not, if you go back and look at the top five quarterbacks in the last six drafts, where would you rank them in comparison to this group of quarterbacks? And my answer was, well, how do I know that the quarterbacks from this year are going to teams where they can succeed or they're going to be coached up to succeed? You know, that unknown element is just as much as rolling the dice as anything else.
Well, it's no different than when I say to you, if the Giants did not enhance their offensive line and they pick Saquon Barkley, and guess what? It turns out to be Blair Thomas with the Jets all over again. When Blair Thomas was taken by the Jets, I screamed the holy high heavens that that was a terrible, terrible pick because they did not have the offensive line that was going to help him. And you know what? What happened? He got the living scrambled eggs beaten out of him. And he never amounted to much. And that's what happens. If you draft a star caliber prospect running back at that level, and then you don't supplement him with the stuff that's going to help him be good, you've wasted your time with the pick. I mean, and it's true for the other positions too. You know, you go and draft a quarterback there, and he doesn't have the other stuff in place, he's going to fail. David Carr, great example. Great example.
Went to a team that had no offensive
line.
You
know, now there are other guys like Jamarcus Russell and Tim Couch and, you know, a bunch of guys who didn't have it and never should have been picked there anyway. But David Carr had ability, and it was just thrown to the curb because the rest of the team around him, the offense in particular, was just a mess.
And that's why you see some players that are drafted in the later rounds, Paul, that wind up outperforming and outproducing the quarterbacks that are taken higher in the draft because they wind up in ideal positions.
And isn't that why it's laughable when people throw the Tom Brady thing in there and they say, well, look how deep he was drafted, sixth-round pick, right?
Yep.
Look at the team that he played on. He plugged Tom Brady into the New England Patriots. I know they weren't those Patriots
but
they were good.
It was a good situation for him. I mean, let's go back to, I went through the last 5 years because 2017 to me is pointless. It's way too soon. I mean, some of these drafts, it's even too soon 2 or 3 years back to evaluate because it's not a big sample size. But 2012, I think we have enough substance here, Paul. So the top five quarterbacks in 2012 was Andrew Luck, RG3, Ryan Tannehill, Brandon Whedon, Brock Osweiler. Okay, those were the top five. The next three, though, Paul, Russell Wilson, Nick Foles, Kirk Cousins. I can make the argument that based on where Russell Wilson went, based on where Kirk Cousins went, and even Nick Foles in his first stint with the Eagles, they were landing in ideal spots compared to the likes of Tannehill, Whedon, and Osweiler. I mean, RG3 was more of injury. So, once again, that's an example of a draft where there was depth at quarterback, but the reason why the guys taken a little bit later on have thrived is more because of the situation as well as their skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And that, once again, you can't just look at the draft and say, oh, well, the guy taken number one is automatically going to be a Hall of Famer. Depends on what he has around him. Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Nick Foles, I think, went into situations that are a little bit more comfortable than the likes of the quarterbacks taken before them. Let's head back to the phone lines as we continue the dialogue and speculation over the number two overall pick. You want to weigh in on JPP being traded as well. Coach Marvin is in Delaware. Coach Marvin, what's happening?
How you doing, Paul?
Hello.
Doing right.
What do you say, Marvin?
Hey, how you doing? Good show today.
We're trying.
You both had some really great points about the draft as fans are getting locked in into one particular position or one particular player.
Can't do it.
We got to look at it like Christmas, you know. Well, Christmas or car shopping. What type of car you want? You can get anyone you want, and you go through all this. That's the situation we're in right now. We've got so many choices right now, which is good for the Giants. So
it should be good, Marvin. Unfortunately, it has caused much anger, stress, and angst among many fans. You almost think that it's an evil thing, you know?
Yeah.
Although, quite frankly, I also remember George Young saying, you never want to pick this side because it means you had a rotten season the year before.
I'm kind of going through all of these scenarios a little bit, watching a little film. Before I get started, though, I want to thank JPP for the time he spent with us. And I think it is time for us to move from that direction, but I'd like to thank him for what he did for us. The other thing I wanted to talk about is in this draft, and I gave you this a few weeks ago, Paul, outside linebacker by the name of Darius Armstrong.
Yes.
I think they can probably get him in the second or late second round, maybe early third. He's very good outside linebacker. I don't know how he is as far as his hip and getting out in coverage because he was a DN at Kansas. So I think they should give him a look. And the second one is the one you were talking about. Me personally, I say stay at the pick, if Donald's not there, if they take Barkley first, take Donald if he's there. And, again, Lance made some good points about, you know, you guys were talking about which one would be a better pick if you were saying longevity. And that probably is Nelson is the one that probably would be longevity.
But, yeah, and that's the problem, Marvin, because depending upon what adage you want to follow, there's a different answer, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Which angle of the prism are you going to look at? And you know, it would be so easy if Lawrence Taylor was just sitting there at number two, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you got to look at the way they're building the team. They already started working on the offensive line. And so they can go anywhere they want. They can go with Barkley if they want to. People should be happy. They can go with Nelson. People should be happy. They can draft. They can trade out. I don't want to go too far out of that top eight range, but we should be fine as long as we get what we deserve to get for that pick.
Yeah.
But my last statement is, you were talking about you're like a big back if they don't take Barkley, because Barkley can do all of those things.
Right.
But the big back, if you don't take Barkley, and we got two guys I think I do like. I like the two backs that we have right now. But there's a guy, Kellen Ballage, out of Arizona State. I think I pronounced his last name right.
Yeah.
A very good, powerful back. Only thing I'm concerned about him is he lost his position later in the season. I'm not sure why that happened. But he is a power running back. And I saw him in the North-South game, and I saw a few of his games. And it tended to look like defensive backs were scared to really tackle this guy. He's a very physical runner, and he does have moves. He's impressive as far as moving.
Yeah, I'm looking at the combine numbers on him. He came in at 6'1", 228, ran a 4.46.
Right. Yep, that's what he ran, 4.46.
But you know what, Marvin? I want to just go back, if I can, for a second. You were talking about Armstrong, and I will tell you, I have not done any film work on him yet. I'm into my film work now. Before we go any further, here's what bothers me about him. Just because we know Betcher needs guys who are fluid athletically because of the style of defense he's going to play, Armstrong, 6'4", 257, they got him at as a 4.87. All right, three cone 7.12, shuttle 4.23, broad jump only 9.10. You know, those are not great athleticism numbers. Now, again, I need to look at him on tape before I tell you if I like him or not. I won't go there.
Right.
But his athleticism numbers are not great.
But, man, you came up under Bill Parcells. What did Bill Parcells tell you about those numbers?
Believe what you see.
Yeah.
Believe what you see. So, Marvin, let me look at him, and then I'll get back to you.
Hey, Coach Marvin, appreciate the phone call.
He doesn't play like his stats said in the combine.
And that's fair.
Well, and that's why you can't get too caught up in terms of what these guys do dancing around in their underwear. You got to look at the college film.
Right.
I mean, that I put a lot more substance.
Marvin, I'll get back to you. I promise you.
I mean, it's the same thing where every time a quarterback throws at a pro day, everybody, you know, goes nuts over the throws in the rain or in the perfect weather. And I'm like, there's no defenses. I mean, really? This is how crazy we're going over the quarterbacks?
I mean, oh, I know.
Trust the film.
Remember Johnny Manziel throwing through the
brooms? Yeah, I mean, come on.
That was laughable.
Go back. Trust what you see during the course of the collegiate career. You can't put all the stock in one pro day
question.
Or one combine.
No question.
Let's head back to the lines. Warren is in South Carolina. Warren, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A great show. I've been a long-time listener and always enjoy you guys.
Well,
so thank
for
you
tuning
very much.
In. We appreciate that. So what do you have for us, Warren?
I'm in the camp. You know, I'm neurotic like the rest of the fans, so I'm in the camp that we don't want to go down below five, which makes a logical trade choice Denver. And just to pine down on that, maybe tie into two callers ago, Paul, what the offer really needs to be, from what I can see, it would have to be a second and third this year and a first next year. Do you think that would add up to an elite offer that the Giants might consider?
I think that to me, that's the minimum that I would think about. Based on people I've talked to around the league, they think you could even ask for more than that, quite frankly, if you're going to move down to the middle of the first round. That, you know, you could ask for an additional pick to that, like even a number two next year, in addition to what you just said. So,
well, that would be awesome. But my neurotic self and everybody else is probably thinking that trade might come at the last minute, depending upon what Cleveland takes.
Right.
If Cleveland goes to Darnold.
No doubt.
And Denver loves your guy, you know, Allen, and that could come right in between picks, right? And then they would be ready to. I mean, I'm just.
That's why if Dave Gettleman is seriously considering the potential of a trade, he's got to hold on to that pick right up until they're on the clock and still field phone calls. Unless he is, I have to have this player and it doesn't matter. I'm taking this guy. I'm not going to entertain any offers. Or somebody comes to him a couple days before the draft and says, you know what, we're going to do what Mike Ditka did when he traded for Ricky Williams and basically give you their entire draft.
Including the kitchen sink.
Then you can't turn that down.
Yeah, but there's no urgency you got to trade it tomorrow. I mean, you can hold on to it till the very last second because the Giants are going to have all the leverage once Cleveland takes whoever they take. Then teams are just going to be desperate and they want to move up, or the Giants will be content with who they've got.
Your best chance to maximize the value is to be on the clock when somebody calls you.
That would be cool. Now, just one other thing, only because, you know, the sort of the shockwaves of JPP getting traded today. I mean, that also sends a signal that anybody on this team other than probably Eli is tradable, and that would include Odell Beckham. And then the question I would have is, I mean, would Cleveland be interested in the fourth pick for Beckham? I mean, if they were, is that a logical thing to expect, or do you think Beckham would go for a lower draft pick?
Well, if Cleveland's going to give
thank
up,
you.
And appreciate the phone call, Warren. I mean, this is not the first time it's been brought up on this show, and my answer is going to be exactly what I always answer it with. Number one, if you're Cleveland, you just acquired Jarvis Landry, who you have to consider whether or not you're going to give him a long-term extension. Now you want to bring in another player who's also on an expiring deal, and you want to risk the fact that he may not re-sign with you. I would not do that if I'm Cleveland. I just don't think that it's good value. Also, if you're Cleveland, you have Landry, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. You have Josh Gordon, and you have Corey Coleman. And I understand Coleman is relatively young, and Gordon is young too, because he really hasn't done much on the football field and he's had off-the-field issues. But I think there's enough upside there where I take my chances to see what I could develop with them before I'm giving up valuable assets like the fourth overall pick to bring in a more proven commodity, but also a player on an expiring contract who may not guarantee to me that he's going to re-sign. And if I'm Cleveland, I turn that fourth overall pick into somebody that I have under a rookie contract and could be a franchise player versus rolling the dice with Odell Beckham. I don't see the true value in doing that if you're the Cleveland Browns.
And quite frankly, just from a logical perspective, outside of that, Odell Beckham is coming off of ankle surgery.
Well, that's more added risk to pull off the trade
for
Cleveland.
And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so if you're another team looking to make a deal for him and you want him, you got to consider that. If you're the Giants, you have to consider you probably can't get maximum value for a gentleman who's coming off surgery.
Because teams are going to be concerned about, is he back to 100%?
So those are other factors that kind of muddy any kind of hypothetical, even if you wanted to talk about that. And quite frankly, I don't think the Giants do.
Yeah, and to the caller's point, I mean, I don't even think you needed to wait to see JPP getting traded to realize that Dave Gettleman's not tied to anybody on this roster. I mean, clearly, if he thinks that he can get better value for what's currently on the roster, he's going to do that. I think that was made clear at his introductory presser when, you know, he said he's going to bring in his type of players and he's going to address the offensive line. That meant that anybody currently under contract with the Giants couldn't have felt that, hey, I know I'm here for the long term.
I just have one final thing to say as we close out the show.
Well, we got one more phone call I want to squeeze in.
There are a lot of people who said that Dave Gettleman was the comfortable choice. He was going to come in and be the same old Giants. He would just sit around and kind of just be comfortable in the seat. Dave Gettleman has been a mover and a shaker this entire time, just like he was in Carolina. He's assertive. He has conviction. And he is aggressive. He believes what he sees. He knows what he wants. And he goes and gets it. Anybody who had that criticism of Dave Gettleman when he was hired, they better go and do a little reverse pivot right now, because this guy knows what he wants to do, and he's doing it.
A lot of free agent moves to trades, and we're not talking about, you know, unknown commodities. JPP out, Alec Ogletree in, some draft picks were involved. Certainly a lot of movement before we even get to the NFL draft. All right, let's head back to the lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right, Len.
Hey, Len.
So what's up?
Well, I'm disappointed, but not shocked on the JPP deal. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised within the next week or two that we see more things like this. I don't think we're going to open our doors to players in the next couple of weeks, start this off-season program, unless we're pretty sure we want these guys in the locker room. And so I wouldn't be shocked if we see something else come down. But, it just seems like the timing is right with JPP. Thanks for the stats at the top of the show, Paul, on tackles and sacks in 2017. He had a pretty good season. But, given the injuries, the age, the questions about the fit to the 3-4, the timing was right, and, we got something for him. Everybody says, we should have got a 2, but, a 3 is probably about right. One other thing on with regard to timing, and I think the players know this and the agents know this, the back end of these long-term contracts are just ridiculous.
Right.
That's
why a lot of guys don't see the back end.
When they sign that contract, the agent must say to the guy, look, you're not going to be there the fourth or fifth year. Let's get the guaranteed money up.
Oh, and that's why guaranteed money is always critical.
I mean, the back end of JPP's contract was ridiculous. I mean, there's no way the Giants could have stayed with that. But, hey, terrific player. Super Bowl. Worked hard. I mean, 90% of the plays. I don't think he dogged it a bit. I think the guy was out there giving it his all on every single play. I'm pleased that we got this much out of him.
He played hurt a lot of this last season. That's for sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Paul.
No, he played hurt a lot of this last season. I'll tell you that firsthand.
Yeah,
he really did.
I know he did.
He gave what he had.
Yeah. Listen, a couple of other things. Man, we're going to see massive change. I mean, 25, 28, maybe 30 new players to the Giants. I mean, it's just going to be a massive amount of players coming in. Let me say something about the 3-4. I'm not a big proponent of the 3-4. In fact, I'm glad we haven't played a 3-4 for 25 years. I know you're going to disagree with me on this, guys, but it's the way I look at it. I think it's a tricked up defense. And when you start getting into hybrid 3-4s and all that kind of, I mean, it's just, give me the old 4-3 defense. But hey, it's where we're going. And I'm happy about one thing. And Paul, I know you used this word earlier in the show. I'm going to pigeonhole a player, and I'm happy as heck to be able to do it with this defense. Because I think the 3-4, you guys are used to hearing me say this, but I think the 3-4 defense starts with that nose tackle. And I am happy as all get out to know that Snacks Harrison is playing that nose tackle position for me.
Yeah.
You get that? You get that nose tackle controlling that line of scrimmage, and you can put Curtis McGriff, Paul, a defensive end, and you can win a lot of football games that way. You get yourself a bunch of linebackers who can run and hit, and corners who can tackle, but you got that big Vince Wilfork top guy. Snacks is going to be terrific for us at nose tackle. And I think we're off to a good start there. All right, well, time marches on.
Thank you, Len.
I think we can expect more the next week or so before they open the doors. I think there are going to be some other guys who are going to go.
Well, there's been a lot of moves, so it would certainly not surprise me, Len. I think that's been the trend.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for weighing in. Appreciate the phone call, Len. So there you have it. JPP traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In case you're just joining us, the Giants get an additional third rounder, and then they're switching spots in the fourth round with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they're going to move down six spots from 102 to 108, but now they have 6 overall picks in the upcoming draft as opposed to 5. So an additional asset for Dave Gettleman and company to take advantage of. Big Blue Kickoff Live will be up and running again tomorrow at noon Eastern. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. We'll try to address some tweets off the air that we didn't get to. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.